I asked an old woman in that native community in Shashichu, at near Moose Bay. I asked a very old woman. I had to have an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
And an interpreter, I said, ask her, do you do the dances and songs? Are they still in memory? And are there young people doing them? The interpreter asked her. She pointed at the woods. And she was talking in Innu.
Yeah.
So when the interpreter said, we do them still, but we do them in the woods, not out in the public. So I said, tell her to bring it out in the public. Bring it out of town square, bring it out everywhere, and teach the children the art of drum and the dance and all these things that are beautiful part of our culture, the spiritual part. And I said, tell her, bring it out, bring it out, bring it all out. Expose it, don't hide it anymore. So the interpreter was talking, they were both talking in Innu, I don't know what they were saying. They were talking a mile a minute. And she smiled. She wore a big silver cross, or that big,
mm-hmm.
that somebody had given to her. She had it here, sterling silver cross, very beautiful. And I hugged her. We were holding, and I learned later they are bringing out the song. They're singing them in public. They're not hiding them in the woods anymore. And I'm happy about that part. Oh, I'm happy about that part. Yeah.
Does that create problems for you with your Christian or Catholic belief?
No, it's not. The priest here, I communicate with him regularly. Mm. He called me up last week. He said, I wish you get some people together and we have a talking circle.
Mm-hmm.
Start forming a talking circle. So I was in touch with different people and women mostly, and I said, let's get together and have a talking circle. And what will we talk about would be anybody's guess, you know, whatever problems. But most of it would be about the spiritual part,
mm-hmm.
the blending of traditional and Christian, the blending, huh? Blending. And that's the part we are going to talk about. Now we're doing that. I understand it. The priest understands it. And some people, they're learning, like Merdina and a few other people that are, they understand it and they know how. My son is also a very rugged Christian belief. And he's also a traditionalist. So he knows, he explains to me even most of the time what he learns from the aged people. Huh? He speaks to the old people and he brings home the knowledge he gains and he shows me how to do it. And he tells me what is lost. And I thank him for it because he's going out more to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And he was disappointed with not going to university, but he is learning the arts,
yeah.
Craft and arts. So he'll have more knowledge by next year. And he's in New Brunswick now,
mm-hmm.
traditional.
First Mi'kmaq people?
Yeah, with native Indian reserves.
Mm-hmm.
He is at... They asked him to go, and he's what you would call a staff carrier. You saw his staff, yeah. So he's in that traditional part. And once in a while he phones home, he tells us where he is. So he has a lot of, he learned, how would you describe it? Learning something through spiritual means,
mm-hmm.
and talking to these elderly people and the sweat lodge and talking circle,
mm-hmm.
and all these things. He's learning so many things. I had a couple of natives here. I had about 16 people here a couple of months ago. And one of the men there, he was a shaman. And his wife was having breast cancer. He was telling me about it, and he was very sad about it. So he had a sacred fire going at his house outside in the wigwam. The last I heard, he had it going for 8 weeks. I don't know if he had it going longer than while his wife was receiving treatment. And she had a whole bit of hair,
yeah.
down to here when she was here a couple of months ago. And I hear now she's bald, chemotherapy.
Yeah.
But her, the medicine worked, so she is free from, I have learned so far. I don't know how long it will last. She's a beautiful person. She's not a native, but she's married to a native. Might as well call her a native because she has
mm-hmm.
beliefs and everything. She's a very beautiful person. And once in a while, you know, they call here. Well, to be honest, she asked me to pray, you know, that she'll be all right, yeah? And of course, she's a good friend, I want. So I work at that part. When I'm writing now, I think of the other people. Who can I help in my song, let's say, yeah? If somebody in Bosnia sees my poem where I write about something and it inspires them, that would be good, maybe into the next century. What about somebody in Iran sees something and it develops their own concept, their own perspective, Iranian, this woman, Native Aboriginal, said this and did that. I can do better. All right. That will inspire that person. So the inspiration is, it's good to leave behind your trail, huh? You know what it's all about. You're doing it. You're a teacher. So in my own way, I would like to be a teacher too.
You are.
But not the intellectual you are. But me,
there's
just
so many different
common
kinds of
sense.
Teachers.
Just common sense, that's all I use. Huh?
Actually, I think that's, if you are a teacher in that sense, and I think I'm, well, I hope to be or become a teacher in that sense too, and I think
mm-hmm.
what I give students, on the one hand, I give them academic know-how, fine,
mm.
and how to do this or that.
Mm.
But what they receive also is something else. And very often I think that's more important. Quite often I find myself talking to students and I always spend hours and hours talking to them. They always come to my office hours and I spend hours. And very often we don't talk about this paper or that. We talk about other things, and they
come
back.
Common sense,
yeah.
Common
yeah.
sense, yeah. I think I'm going to have a young, he's not young, but he may come. I have a son who comes, works hard, and I find he's hungry. You had anything good to eat?
No. I had breakfast this morning.
Yeah. I pity him, he's working at the bridge there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So he comes home for lunch, yeah?
Yeah, sometimes he does, sometimes
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-hmm.
But I always prepare something for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking...
When I switch...
If I can do one more film to inspire again, inspire anybody, and teaching telling stories or poetry. I would like to do something that's today, 1993. And when I asked them to do the film, I said, show the native in 1990, that was last year, I said, show the native in 1992 setting.
Yeah.
That's the way we are. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
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 But I always...
no spray painting.
No, yeah. Well, they're spray painting over there, that's a Disney movie, yeah. The two boys are like that too. Heard Wegebach, which means end of water. You know, the water goes in like that, end of water. And I was born there in 37 and left there when I was 5 years old. Never went back until after I married Frank. And Eskasoni, I came here in 55. After marrying Frank, and we ended up here later, you know, from different places. And Eskasoni means edge of tree land, Wegwistohonik. Wegwistohonik is like edge of tree land, huh?
Yeah.
So that's where the word comes from. White man turned it into Eskasoni. Same with Waikagama, you know. And what else? Well, it's over 3,000 population.
Eskasoni.
Yeah.
Was this always a Mi'kmaq?
No, it was not a native. One day I was talking to some people and I asked them who lived here first. They said at first they were French living here, French families. Later on they were Scottish. And then later on, natives. When natives began to move in, you know, natives tended to live near water. They always liked to live near water. And I imagine the Scottish or the French moved away. The French moved away because the Scottish came. The Scottish moved away because the natives came. And the native state put, and it began to grow. And, you know, the big place now. It's about 7 miles long. All that over there, Island View, that's native community too. But we don't bother non-natives that have camps. Don't bother them. That's native community all that long there. But we don't, well, they were afraid of us and we were afraid of them before. But now they know us and they don't bother us. You know, people stop by that fast food place there, like a trailer. People from the community, they stop by on their way to town and buy from that guy, and coming home, they buy from that guy. He comes onto the community and, you know, we're not afraid of each other anymore, you know.
That's good.
Now natives, they come and buy cigarettes.
Oh yeah.
No tax on the cigarettes. And gas, of course, and our fire trucks help them when there's a problem with fire. Our fire trucks go, and they help us. And so it's that communication is all open now. Well, knowing what the people are like, finally, you know, it's just like there's no fear anymore. And we have no fear of them. Me, I had to learn, when I was little, I was afraid of non-natives. That's because learning from my older relations, you know, white people, stay away from them, don't go near them, they're going to hurt you, they're going to be mean, and don't go near. So, you know, it keep you, I imagine their children, they told the same thing to their children.
Yeah, I guess so,
So, but, you know, growing up and then living in Boston and Montreal or Halifax or these places, you know, after a while, you know there's no need of fear. That depends on you. It depends on your outlook on how I look at it. If you are not mean to people, no matter where you live, even my neighbors here, if I'm not mean, I'm going to have everybody as a friend.
Eh? Yeah.
Same with any place you live. But in the city, when I lived in Halifax, so, you know, that's where I had to lock my door. You know, I never know who's going to come into my place, and there was fear.
Yeah.
I spoke to them, I was civil with them, but, you know, but there was no... You do not get friendly with neighbors.
Yeah.
That's the way it is in the city, eh?
Yeah.
But coming here, when I came here, I wanted to know everybody. I wanted to know everybody, smiling face, and I began to talk Mi'kmaq. I never spoke Mi'kmaq. When I first met Frank, we spoke English. He spoke to me first in English when he came knocking on my door.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking for his cousins, and he spoke English. The next day I met him again. He spoke English again. Finally he looked at me that Sunday morning. He said, "You speak Mi'kmaq?" I said, "Yeah."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "So let's speak Mi'kmaq." And we started conversing in Mi'kmaq. That's how we, the second day we knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke in Mi'kmaq. And he used to make fun of me because I said, I did not pronounce my words right.
Yeah.
I was like relearning the language, But I laughed along with the people here. I grew to love the people in the community, And, when we were married about 10 years, you know, when my children began to be a little bit bigger, there's no more babies, huh? Then I began to, that's when I began writing.
Yeah.
So I began to visit the elderly, the elderly in the community. And when I would talk with them, the elderly people, and you know, I'm telling a story what happened with my children or with my husband or something, and I'm talking, and they'll be laughing, they'll be smiling, or they'll be laughing. Finally I ask, "What are you laughing at? What's so funny?" And they'll say, "Well, you're not pronouncing your words, backwards right." So I would laugh loud. "Excuse me, Auntie. I'm just learning," I would tell them. So it was like that. I grew to love the older people. I was nice to everybody, but the older people are the ones you get the stories from.
Yeah.
So I was always visiting. And I cannot leave my children too long. So during Lent, that's early part of spring,
Yeah.
40 days.
Yeah.
I would not go bingo, I would not play cards, and sort of abstaining from, you know, that kind
those
of
pleasures,
stuff.
Yeah.
No movies and stuff like that. So I would visit the elderly at that time, 40 days. And every year they expected that. And finally, one year I didn't do it. Every year I did it. So one year I didn't do it. And so next time I saw them, the elderly people, they would say, "You didn't come to visit. You do every Lent. You always come to visit. All of us in Castle Bay, all of us across the river." "Oh, I didn't do it this time, Auntie." And they would say, "Why?" "No, I don't know. I just stopped doing it." "Well, you get back and do that again," they would tell me and scold me. And I loved them. And I hug everybody and handshake and spend time with them. You know, you grow to love them.
Yeah.
All people are like that. And, you know, loving family too. And mother-in-law trying to win her love too. She's very critical. Oh my God, what a critical mother-in-law. I had to... "You don't cook the food right, you don't clean right, you don't raise your children right," and on, like a, and, you know, trying to please her all the time.
So you had a hard time, huh?
Yeah, and I tried to please her, because I wanted her to love me more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a second mother. Huh?
Yeah.
And finally, after a while, and she was a grumpy,
mm-hmm.
grumpy old woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you ever meet these people, they had no happiness in life, so they take it out on other people.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
kind.
Yeah.
She used to I used to love my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he would be very, he would drink and then he's
mm-hmm.
mean, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So we get into it and oh, the next day it's very hurting, eh?
Yeah.
And she would come and ask me what happened yesterday, what happened. And,
mm-hmm.
and I would tell her. And she says, I don't know why you stay with him. She couldn't understand why I would stay with a person that hurt me.
Yeah.
And I would say, I love him.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I cannot understand how you can love an individual that hurts you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say, it's our children.
Yeah.
We love our children. We stay together no matter what. And she said, I had two husbands. And I didn't love either of them. The first one was the arranged marriage. She was 18 and he was 42. And she was a beautiful person while he was not nice looking. But she didn't love me. It was arranged marriage.
Yeah.
He died after a couple of children. And a year and a half she was single and she was having a hard time. She married the second man. And second man was necessity again.
Yeah.
And she was a beautiful woman, very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I married two men and I never loved either of them. But she could not understand.
But it was her own son.
Yeah. But she couldn't understand that part of it, you
mm-hmm.
know. So I taught him throughout the years. We spent 35 years together. So I taught him, you do not do these things to a woman, you know, day to day, and I always complimented him, always did everything he wanted, what food he wanted, what names to name our children,
mm-hmm.
or what he wanted done, always him,
mm-hmm.
number one, huh? Our children came along, and I treated our children very well brought up, and he was always working. You ever meet these hard working men, but also hard living?
Yeah.
You know, wants to get drunk and with the boys or some
mm-hmm.
things like that. And I would look the other way, and I'd let him do what. Because that's what he wants, huh?
Yeah.
So, our marriage survived. It was my doing. It survived.
Mm-hmm.
It was my doing. My sister-in-law, his sister, she married an older man. She used to say, if I was married to a man like my brother,
yeah.
She said, I would have left him a long time ago. And she couldn't understand why I stayed with him, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no explaining to another individual. There are reasons. You have your reasons.
Yeah.
And those reasons is too deeply rooted to explain to all in one explanation.
Yeah.
I cannot explain to anybody why I love my husband.
Mm-hmm.
There's no explanation at all. Only I understand.
Yeah.
I respect a man, admire him, I don't know what else, these different things.
Yeah.
There is a reason, there is a good man there.
Yeah.
He is good. It's the liquor that's in the way.
Oh,
If he learned to leave that alone, he's a good man in there.
Yeah.
And he did finally leave it alone. And came the good man.
That's good.
Oh, so It was.
So he quit altogether?
He quit. It's just like if you cut something off.
Well, just, that's the only way to handle it then.
He just quit and never touched it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we all had a, well, the children remember their father in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they remember when he exploded or he got mad or something. They remember that part. But they also remember the good. I always try to keep the good things alive. To remind them. Remember that time when we all had a picnic somewhere or when we went for a boat ride or, you know, you try to keep all these good times alive. And they remember that. But there is also that fear that they felt one time, you know.
Yeah.
And I know when a woman is carrying a baby, I learned later, when a woman is carrying a baby, big with the baby, if there is fear or you're being hollered at or whatever, the baby experiences the same thing.
Yeah.
And this young one, Ann, said yesterday, in fact she said that yesterday, she said, I'm always wondering why I don't like drunk people today. I do not like to see a person drunk. I just immediately leave that area where they are. Does not like to experience a drunk person being in the same room with her. She says, I still have that feeling.
Yeah.
And she also is fear of loud voices.
Yeah.
You know, anybody hollers, she's just terrified, huh?
Yeah.
Loud voices. And we were talking about that yesterday, you know, the whole family, and they remember these things, huh? But we tend to shove them under there, you know, somewhere.
Yeah.
You put them out of your mind. Try to think of the good good times. They think, we used to go, I would take hot dogs and bread and a little pot and diapers. I had a little baby and all these little, like little steps, my children. And along that shore, we used to go all along the shore until behind there, way behind the cove.
Yeah.
And we would remain there all day.
Mm-hmm.
I would have food there. That Sunday, the little baby, and they remember that. Remember, Mom, we used to dig for clams and hot dogs and open fire. And you remember that.
That's good.
But, you know, that's the good, huh?
Those are the things
to remember. They do not remember. I took them there because their father was drinking.
Yeah.
They do not remember that part.
I see, yeah.
I took them and it was like a picnic.
Yeah.
Stay away all day.
Yeah.
And then come home when it started to get dark, come home. Everybody is tired and then they all just quick shower and do their pajamas and go to bed. You know, that's all they remember.
Yeah.
They would be tired and of course by that time he's sober and the liquor's all gone and he's sick. Where you been all day? Behind there, you know, so he cannot say nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. So the children remember the good times.
That's good.
Know?
Yeah.
And, oh, there's a lot of instances. I try to look for the, I try to remember the good times. Oh, there were a lot of good times. There were a lot of, we'll all go blueberry picking sometime in Maine, the whole family. And we would pick blueberries. We're working hard, back-breaking work, and
yeah,
I have to cook for them. But the happy, the happy experiences of jumping into the water and they go swimming and, and then we go home and we're all tired out.
Who would you pick the blueberries for?
Me, now. Well, we earn a lot of money quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then we try to fix up the house with the money. We come home, we fix up something, we buy this and that. And their school clothes or whatever. And they remember that part as good.
Was that like...
migration.
Yeah, migrant work, yeah.
Yeah, migrant work, yeah.
And the blueberries, was that in sort of open areas? And
yeah.
You had
oh,
to go and
fields.
Sell them?
They have fields.
Or they are artificially
like
planted?
Fields.
Oh, they are whole
God.
Fields. I
and
see.
They're all sectioned up.
Oh,
we
I see.
We take two sections. There's
so
it's there,
it's,
yeah. Oh, and we work at those.
I see.
All day, from
yeah,
early
yeah.
morning, 5 in the morning.
So it's not going out and looking for blueberries?
No, no. They're all open fields.
I see, yeah.
And we try to make, we get paid like...
Cranberries too, huh?
Yeah. But, well, what we pick was blueberries only,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah. And me and my husband sometimes would go on to pick potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And we come home, we earn a lot of money, and then we come home. And, we buy children's clothes and everything, and then he looked for work here in the community again.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a hard-working man,
yeah.
always hard-working
yeah.
man, yeah. And so they, you know, they remember all the good times. And being poor, too. Oh, God, the poor guy, when he walked in one day and said, I'm going back to school.
Yeah, you told me about
oh,
that, yeah.
That was... But that was to build his spirit.
Yeah.
His spirit, yeah. But me, you know, I think I built my spirit through my writing.
Yeah.
I always say it was my therapy.
Yeah.
When something came hard,
yeah.
it was my therapy.
I think a lot of people say that, especially women say that. A lot of women start writing as therapy.
Yeah.
Also because
artwork,
often they
art.
Have nobody else to talk to
yeah.
mm-hmm. about some things. Huh?
Mm-hmm. You know, I talk with the women in the community.
Mm-hmm.
When I began to began to show my bruises or what, you know,
yeah.
then I went to the elderly for that.
Yeah.
Elderly women, and they told me what to do. This is how it's done,
mm-hmm.
and they showed me. And I would come home, and sometimes I would even stay with the elderly woman at night. You
yeah.
know, and when I come home, where you been? I stayed with that woman last night. My God, did you tell her what we did last night? We had a fight? Yes, I told her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the turning point, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I advise women.
To tell about, to talk
tell,
about
yeah.
it. Yeah.
But some native women here a long time ago used to hide their bruises.
Yeah.
Not tell anybody what's happening at home.
Why do you think there is so much violence of that kind? It's because of the alcohol, huh?
Alcohol, yeah. Because most of the men do not do that when they are sober.
No.
It's alcohol. It's not only this native culture, all cultures
yeah.
is like that, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So younger women, if I know of anybody that's being abused,
mm-hmm.
if I know, well, I usually show them what to do.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes when they're young, they don't.
No.
They rather.
They think it's their own fault almost,
yeah.
and they're ashamed.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, now you know. Now nowadays, it's not happened. It does not happen that. Not happened that much.
No.
Not in the community anyway. It does not happen because, the old women my age, they give their children advice.
Yeah.
What to do.
Yeah.
Do not suffer abuse at the hands of anybody. You
yeah.
leave that person right away. And now there's transition houses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A long time ago they were, God, I would go to a Mountie all bloody. I cannot do anything unless you press charges. If you press charges, they're not looked after right away. So you end up going back to this abusive husband. And you have to live with that husband until your trial comes and
yeah,
3 months
yeah,
later.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. So we'd rather not do anything, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's different. It's different. The laws have changed,
yeah.
I imagine, yeah.
Well, it's good.
Yeah. But me, I like to, you know, sometimes in my poetry, I look for the beauty of everything. I look for it. Let's say use an example of residential schools.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad stories about residential schools. I look for the good,
mm-hmm.
the beautiful part
mm-hmm.
of our life. And one woman interviewed me, and she wrote, oh boy, a controversial book. Oh boy, it's making the rounds of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a textbook, school textbook now,
mm-hmm.
her book. But when she interviewed me, she said, let's sit and talk about the good part. You say there was good there. All right. I'm going to give you a chance and think a few minutes. What good story can you tell me?
Mm-hmm.
She would ask me.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat there and I tried to remember what was good about that place. Well, finally I came up with one story. I said, well, a nun made me happy one time when I was 15 when she gave me a pair of skates. Well, and then something else, I remember something else. But she said, do you notice you have a hard time looking for the good?
Yeah.
Well, I said, yeah, it's next to impossible.
Mm.
But it must have been good, I said, because we're alive today,
yeah.
we're healthy, you're an educated individual, and
mm-hmm.
I'm famous for my writing, so it must have been good. That was why we were there. Would we have become famous if we were not there? Who knows? Nobody knows.
No, but
yeah.
There's no way of finding out.
No. But she wrote what the truth. She wrote the truth, and it hurts to remember.
Yeah.
I read her book thoroughly. A friend of mine from Halifax who was there, she said, oh, I would not read Isabel's book, she said. I would not care to read it because it's all lies anyway, like that. She went like that. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, it's not lies, because I read it, and I was there with her. And everything she writes in that book is true. And I said, have you read it? She said, no. Well, I said, how can you criticize
yeah,
it when you have not read it?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I said, by the way, your picture is in it. I've seen your picture. Oh, she said, my picture is in it. She got all excited. I said, yes. You were plump and you were right kind of chubby, I said. But you were pretty in the picture. And she got all excited. She said, I'm going to get the book and look at it. Yeah.
Which book is that?
It's called Out of the Depths. Out of the Depths, D-E-P-T-H-S.
Yeah.
I asked her, why did you
Isabel,
call it Out of the Depths?
And what's her second name, Isabel?
Isabel Knockwood Shea. Isabel Shea, S-H-A-Y.
S-H-A...
Why?
Isabel Shea.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Isabel. Well, her maiden name is Knockwood, N-K-N-O-C-K-W-O-D. Isabel Knockwood Shea.
And that came out when, do you know?
Huh?
When did that book come out, do you know?
Let me see now, what's 93 now? 92. It was launched in 92, and it's a very controversial...
In Halifax, or...?
Yes, it was launched in Halifax, and... Well, it's across the nation. She has
mm-hmm.
traveled across the nation, you know.
There's a lot of stuff coming out about that.
Yeah.
Also films.
Yeah.
There's one film that Maria Campbell sent me, Journey to Healing.
Yeah.
That's about a whole get-together, a meeting where people talked about these experiences
yeah.
to heal. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Isabel's book, I look at it as, well, the people that were there, when they read it, it heals their, it starts a healing process, and it brings out the truth and everything. But, you know, in a way, I pity the people she's hurting, and that's the nuns. They are hurting. They were not all involved in the bad. There were only certain individuals that
sure.
did these things,
yeah.
same in the West. Not everybody did the, you know, not all. Where I stayed, there was 12 nuns, and I only remember one as being negative about the children that she was taking care of. All the rest I remember as kind, loving, caring people, yeah. I remember one nun in particular, she used to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go to her, we're all little and a whole lot of little children go to her, and some little ones, and they'll say, oh, my hand is sore somewhere. Mm-hmm. They can't find a sore. Just loving.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Just a loving. So she, and I remember she had big eyes, and she would, the faces she made, and we would just love her. Uh-huh. We would go, and sometimes you're even glad if you have a little cut so you can go to Sister Williams, was her name.
Uh-huh.
We all loved her. And there was another one, the sewing room, Sister Rita. And we used to ask her, were you young one time?
Mm-hmm.
And she would say yes. And she would tell the stories about when they were coasting, skating or skiing, and how she used to play rough and tomboy and all that. And did you have a mother? Of course I had a mother and father and grandparents. She's like you know.
Yeah.
And you know, it's unbelievable that they were like us, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So we shared all these stories with them, and certain ones we loved, and but the one we did not like, we didn't know anything about her. All we knew that she was from Boston. And some people, you know, met her later, and she was very old and very sick later on. And she was not sorry about, I have no knowledge of her being sorry, how she treated children, never. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, was her hate of native children, or was it because of not being promoted to a higher something, maybe she wanted
maybe
a teaching job or something?
Yeah, maybe she never wanted to be a nun.
Yeah, maybe.
I know
that's
some cases,
my wife
went to a Catholic college for social work for 1 year.
Yeah.
Although she's not Catholic herself, but there were several of the other students were nuns, huh?
Yeah.
Well, one of them eventually committed suicide because she couldn't take it. She had no way to go, no place to go to.
No.
Because her parents, they were a very strict Catholic family, and it was a tradition that one of the children
Has to become a nun.
A nun, and if they had several boys, one of them had to become a priest. And if she dared to go home, it would have been so much shame in the community. She had nowhere to go.
Mm.
So she didn't want to be a nun, you know. And maybe it's one of those.
Gee,
those things happen. Huh?
That's awful.
It's awful, yeah. And I think if somebody's mean to other people, they must be very frustrated about themselves, you know.
Maybe she became a nun because her parents forced her.
Yeah, who knows? Huh?
And then she ended up in taking care of native, these little children that she detested in the first place. You know. So there was a reason. But she would be nice at times. She was nice at, you know, certain times she would be nice and treat us very good. I don't know, she seemed to have a split personality. One minute she'd be very kind, and the next
she probably regretted it.
Ready to hit you.
Yeah.
So we were all anxious about trying to please her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's the one that told me wanted me to go to West and go to high school there. Gee, I was thinking, I don't know anybody in the West. I don't want to go in the West for higher learning. I didn't want to go there, not knowing anybody.
No.
So I said, no, I don't want to go. She said, we think you are non-material. You are very good with children, and you should become a nun. No way, I was 16, I just wanted to get away from there as fast as possible, huh?
Yeah.
And she said...
Were they grey nuns?
Hmm?
Were they gray nuns?
No, they were our Sisters of Charity.
Mm-hmm.
You know those ones that have white hair?
Yeah, yeah.
And a black veil in the back?
Yeah.
And long,
right.
Like a cape here?
Yeah.
And long gowns that reach the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They have prayer beads hanging
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
They were like that, yeah. There was, she said, you would make a good nun. I remember she was the one talking most of it. And the other Sister Superior. And the other Sister Superior said, you are very good with children. I said, yeah, I love children. But I said, she said, you may go to Halifax and we have a job ready for you there. We asked them to hire you. I said, I want the job.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how much I would be earning,
mm-hmm.
but I wanted the job. Being in that place, not handling money for
yeah.
4 years, I wanted to earn my own money. So I took on that. I remember being on a train, and the train is pulling away from the station.
Oh.
And I have a little box, one skirt and one blouse and an extra pair of undies. And I have this whole new outfit on.
Mm-hmm.
And I am holding on to my box and I'm looking at the school and the train is pulling away. And I keep looking at the school until I could see it no more. And then I'm sitting there and I'm
crying, huh?
Crying, huh?
Yeah.
And then a few minutes later and I'm sitting there giggling. I'm giggling. I am free. I am free. You know, I'm
uh-huh.
thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm free. Nobody is going to tell me what to do again. When to blow my nose, when to go to the bathroom, when to pray, when to go to bed or whatever. You couldn't even yawn. You couldn't even cough. You're told not to cough. So, when you want to cough, you just hold it in. If you want to yawn or something, you suppress it. You know? And you hold your bladder if you don't, until we're told when to go. Oh God, I pitied a young man. He's about 14 years old. He's a nice looking fellow. He's an Indian chief today down in Pictou Landing. And he was up in the front. And we're all girls who are sitting in the back, and we're in grade 5 and grade 6, grade 7 and grade 8. And he put up his hand. It was about 10 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
School comes out 3 o'clock. He put up his hand. Sister, may I leave the room?
Mm.
His bladder was bursting. And he's a handsome fellow.